again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and I want you to look at something.
You guys seem to be sort of saying that boots on a pier connected to the ground, connected to service members shooting into Gaza, doesn't count as boots on the ground?
It does not.
I think you're going to find the American people have a different perspective on that. And if we're going to have people shooting into Gaza, we probably should have a vote on that.
He is 100% correct that we should have a vote on that. But then again, when was the last time U.S. citizens were asked for their take on any military adventures or actions, or even Congress for that matter, even though the Constitution says they're supposed to approve these types of things? You're going to hear a lot more of this really testy exchange between Congressman Matt Gaetz and the Secretary of Defense. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's get to it. All right, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to hear this full exchange now between Congressman Gaetz and the Defense Secretary Austin. I want you to pay particular attention to how casual Lloyd Austin is about war planning and troop movements, and without any apparent consideration of the consequences. And why is that? This conversation, right, that you're about to hear, it could be about Ukraine, it could be about the South China Sea, often is, Iran, Venezuela, really just about any place. But in this particular occasion, it happens to be about the decision that President Biden has made to send troops onto some floating pier off the coast of Gaza. Here it is from the beginning.
Ms. Lotkin just said there'll be about 1,000 U.S. service members operating a pier system off of Gaza. How many of them will have guns, Mr. Secretary?
Well, typically all of the deployed service members carry guns, and they have the ability to protect themselves if challenged.
So if someone from land in Gaza shoots at our service members who are on the $320 million pier that we're building, you're telling me our service members can shoot back?
They have the right to return fire to protect themselves. Now,
well,
now
do we
again,
think that's like? So now I want to move to the likelihood that you think someone from land in Gaza might shoot at our service members on this pier. Do you think that's a likely scenario?
That's possible. Yes.
This is a very telling moment, Mr. Secretary, because you've said something that's quite possible that could happen, right? Shots from Gaza on our service members, and then the response, our armed service members shooting live fire into Gaza. That is a possible outcome here so that we can become the Port Authority and run this pier. Right?
That's correct. You know, I expect that we will always
Don't
have the ability to protect ourselves.
Don't you think that counts as boots on the ground? President Biden told the country that we weren't going to have boots on the ground in Gaza.
And we won't.
Okay, but you guys parse the distinction between, like, when Americans think boots on the ground, they think Americans in harm's way or engaged actively in a conflict. You guys seem to be sort of saying that boots on a pier connected to the ground, connected to service members shooting into Gaza, doesn't count as boots on the ground?
It does not.
I think you're going to find the American people have a different perspective on that. And if we're going to have people shooting into Gaza, we probably should have a vote on that.
We should have a vote on that. And think about what he's saying, that the people who may be shooting at U.S. troops aren't going to shoot because they're not actually on the territory. They're on a piece of wood that just is connected to the territory. That seems ludicrous. And by the way, here's another part of the debate that I want to share with you. This is important. This one's about the F-35. Let me tell you a little bit about the F-35. It's one of the most expensive stealth bombers that's ever been built, which up until recently hasn't even been able to fly because apparently it's too dangerous. So it according to what we read, it attracts lightning. So if it's ever going through any kind of storms while it's flying, like, duh, there's going to be storms everywhere, right? It could blow up in midair because it attracts lightning, right? Really? Consider this. Each plane cost $135 million to build, and there are about 450 of them out there right now already. I did the math on that just on my, you know, on my iPhone. That means that we have spent $61 billion on these things. Here's this exchange.
How many $100 million paperweights do we own?
I would not categorize the F-35 as a paperweight.
Well, if it's not mission capable, if it's what do we just stare at it and admire it?
We continue to work to make sure that we get our aircraft operational and continue to.
I don't know. Don't you think at 100 million a clip, more than 29% should be fully operational? And if the fact that we can't get them operational, you know what Secretary Kendall said when he was sitting in that chair? He said the core root of the problem is that we had let Lockheed Martin build this thing, and then we gave Lockheed Martin the full system performance contract. And they keep bilking us, according to the GAO, and we sit around staring at a $100 million airplane that can't fully perform the mission, and you're sitting here telling me it's not a failure. Just own up to it, Mr. Secretary. Just say, this airframe has not delivered, it's too costly, it's not being utilized as we should, and we should never again make the mistake of doing a full system performance contract with the very person who built the aircraft. Could we agree to that?
I agree. In the future, we should have a different approach.
But this is exactly what we were just talking about the other day with Boeing. They do it over and over again. Even if they say they're not going to do it, they will. In fact, let's talk here just a little bit about what Mr. Congressman Gates was saying, right? They let Lockheed Martin come in and build this F-35 without oversight. That means that Lockheed Martin gets to build it. They get to do their own review. And then they turn around and tell the government, oh, it's great. Don't worry about it. It's in perfect condition. We did a great job. Well, sure, they're going to say that. But it wasn't in great shape. So why would the Pentagon, why would Congress approve of something like this? You know why? Let me tell you why. You know why? Because it's not their money. It's not their money. It's your tax money, my tax money. And when it comes to anything having to do with the military, they think all they have to do is say, rah, 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 God bless America, we love our troops, you know, fly a couple planes before the football games, and then we taxpayers will just go along with anything. No questions asked. How much do you want? $100 billion? You got it. What, planes, bombs, another war somewhere in a place that we couldn't even find on a map? Why not? I'll tell you, Congressman Gates, he may be one of the few, but he's telling the truth in this case. Manila, what do you think of these exchanges?
Yeah, Rick, I mean, where do we begin? I mean, what kind of world are we in that Matt Gaetz and even someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene are the ones that we should be listening to, right? Let's start with this F-35. I'm going to call it the fair weather jet. So the GAO actually says that the DOD currently has about 630 F-35s, and they plan to buy about 1,800 more, and they intend to use them until 2088, Rick. So the projected cost to sustain these unflyable jets is gonna cost well over $1 trillion, up into $1.5 trillion. That was the GAO's review in 2023. So it's way, way more, way cost overrun after cost overrun, and their performance has been down over the last 5 years. So what Matt Gaetz is saying here, that it's, you know, a multi-billion dollar paperweight, is absolutely right. But the bigger question is, as you pointed out and you alluded to, why is Matt Gaetz the only one talking about this, or even Marjorie Taylor Greene? Why are those two the ones talking about this?
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, because here's another one. Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? You're right. Sometimes she's been as crazy as a loon on some of the things she's said in the past, but she's been making a lot of sense lately. Much like Congressman Gaetz, she's also asking a lot of important questions. She's asking why we don't better handle our borders. She questions why we spend hundreds of billions of dollars so contractors can get rich. She criticizes her congressional colleagues right to their face for taking money from lobbyists. And she called the Speaker of the House a sellout. So this past week, when she rose to ask for his removal for breaking his promise on spending, watch this. Watch, Manila, how she was treated.
The resolution is as follows. Declaring the office of Speaker of the House of Representatives to be vacant. This is the uniparty for the American people watching.
The gentlelady will suspend. Order.
Isn't she right? I mean, they like to pretend to argue about wedge issues, right? All the time in Congress. you know, that really has no effect on my life or your life or most citizens' life, but on the big stuff, the important stuff, wars, spending, and the money they take from donors to do their bidding. She's right. They are a uniparty. Manila, I mean, she's saying it, and they're booing her, but she's telling them the truth they don't want to hear.
Yep, that's precisely why they're booing her, Rick. I mean, let's face it. We know that the two big parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, they are two wings on the same bird. I mean, the semantics might be different here and there. The details might be different. But the big issues,
yes,
whether it's supporting war, whether it's supporting censorship, or anything else like that, they're all the same. And then it just becomes the little details of here and there,
right,
of what differentiates between the two parties. But at the end of the day, war being the big moneymaker for everybody on Capitol Hill, they always agree. Everything is always, yeah, increased. The budgets, the bloated,
right,
bloated budgets. The DOD gets what they want all the time for stuff that doesn't work.
They'll go for 3 weeks talking about something someone said on TV, or some kid who dressed up as a woman to play basketball in Missouri, or something that, yeah, it's important, but it's not as important as $150 billion on a useless war. But that's what they'll spend a long time picking their little wedge issues, left, right, while we sit here oftentimes as citizens going, oh, yeah, that's really important. Well, it's not. Not as important. By the way, I got something else for you. Ann Coulter. Remember Ann Coulter? She's back in the news. For those of you who don't know, she's a woman who got famous and made a lot of money saying controversial, if not bigoted, things about Hispanics and blacks and Muslims and Arabs and whatever. She's one of the most famous, by the way, one of the most famous Indian Americans, I should say, is a guy named Vivek Ramaswamy, who recently ran for president. Well, here is Ann Coulter telling him she could never vote for him to his face because he's Indian.
You are so bright and articulate, and I guess I can call you articulate since you're not an American black. Oh, and I agreed with many, many things you said during, in fact, probably more than most other candidates when you were running for president, but I still would not have voted for you because you're an Indian.
Let me tell you something about Ann Coulter. I know Ann Coulter, and we talk on the phone. I've interviewed her many, many times when I was at CNN and NBC. Does she say crazy and bigoted things to sell books? Yes. Does she also believe it? I think yes. Both can be true. Because I think if you can say something long enough, after a while, you start buying what you preach. So I say yes on both counts, but I'm dying to hear what you have to say about this, Manila. Do you think she's just doing it to sell books and to be famous, and I guess to get more followers, or is she a bigot?
You know what? I mean, both can be true, right? Like you said, she might have, I mean, we can't get into her heart,
correct,
first and foremost. We
Fair.
Should put that out there. We
Fair.
Don't know. We can never know what's really in somebody's heart. And I've said this over and over that, you know, you can never legislate out that type of hatred if she does indeed have it. But let's point out a couple of other things. Even though she said that she would never vote for Vivek Ramaswamy because he's, quote, an Indian, even though he was born in Ohio and he was born and raised here in the U.S.
Great point.
She also dated Dinesh D'Souza. You know, the very conservative filmmaker, pundit, the GOP loves him. She dated him. So I don't know. As
yeah.
a woman, a part of me feels like she's kind of doing this. It's a lot of bluster, a lot of hot air. She gets clicks. People buy her books. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of this is an image similar to what we saw with Alex Jones, that from all accounts, from what I've heard, he's not as nutty as he portrays on his show. And maybe Anne is not as bigoted as she portrays publicly.
I think that's fair. And I think you stated it well. And thank you for reminding us that he was born in Ohio. So,
yes.
Yeah, he's of Indian descent. He's not an Indian. Ugh. Great job, Manila. Thank you so much. We appreciate the information. When we come back, Steve Gill is a lawyer from Tennessee who recently served as a quasi-election monitor in Russia during their presidential election. That has given them the kind of insight most Westerners don't have. There he is right there. You're looking at him. Handsome devil. Steve is going to join us when we come back right here on Direct Impact.
Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
The rapid collapse of the Ottoman Empire gave the Arabs hope for independence. But the colonial powers saw their future differently. Great Britain and France agreed on the seizure of the Arab lands under the guise of the so-called Mandate of the League of Nations. This foul play caused particular indignation in Iraq, which was to get under the control of the British. In May 1920, unrest with claim for independence broke out. Both the Sunni and the Shia took part in it. Soon the rallies turned into a real uprising against the invaders. More than 130,000 people took up arms. Britain urgently began to transfer reinforcements to Iraq and used aircraft. British War Secretary Winston Churchill urged the use of chemical weapons against the rebels, and General Sir Aylmer Haldane ordered the destruction of any village where weapons were found. Burning a village properly takes a long time, an hour or more, according to size, Haldane recalled cynically in his memoirs. The medieval cruelty paid off. The revolt was crushed. However, the British Empire had to make serious concessions. In 1921, it recognized Faisal I as the King of Iraq and gave part of the power to representatives of the local population. The Iraqi revolt marked the beginning of the national consolidation of the country and became an important milestone on the way to final independence.
And joining us now, as promised, is attorney Steve Gill from Nashville. Steve, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thank you. Hey, let me touch real quickly on the last segment.
Sure.
I hate to disrespect the Secretary of Defense, but he's an utter buffoon. Hamas is shooting at the delivery of medicine and food on the ground in Gaza. What do we think they're going to do as they're meeting our troops on a pier that's connected to the ground? And what happens when the truck moves from the pier into Gaza? They're going to take the food and medicine just like they've been doing. And the F-35, this is the same plane that you had the pilot bail out and kind of flew by itself and they lost in South Carolina because of a thunderstorm. What are we going to do? Again, this is the Secretary of Defense. What are we going to do if we're trying to fly one of these bombers into a place where it's nice and sunny where it's taking off, but cloudy where it's going? There may be thunderstorms in the middle. Do we call timeout and hope the enemy decides to fight another day? This guy's worse than Joe Biden mentally.
But I would argue with you, it's not him. We keep doing that. That's the problem we have in this country. I'll have a Republican on this show like you, and he'll tell me, oh, this guy's bad because there's a Democrat in the White House. Then we get a Republican in the White House like Trump, and they make the same stupid decisions, and they do the same
stupid
things.
Well, and like Marjorie Taylor Greene said, it's the uniparty.
It is.
All of these guys leave the Department of Defense and the Department of State, and they go right to work for these military contractors, getting paid, preserving their security clearance so they can still say, hey, here's what's coming next. We need to do this weapon next. We need to do this plan next. They get paid and keep their security clearance after they leave and after they betray our country. It is bad on both parties, and it's intolerable.
If there's one thing we've recently learned, and I mentioned this earlier during my introduction to one of the segments that I just did with Manila, was the more I look into this Boeing fiasco that we're going through, the more I see how the government just basically turned its back on Boeing and literally said to them, do whatever you got to do. Inspect your own planes. Tell us how the inspections are going. Tell us what kind of equipment you're using. Make them wherever the hell you want. Don't listen to your employees. Blame everything on your pilots, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sorry, but there are some things, right, that the government does need to provide oversight for. And the safety of my mom, my wife or my kids or you and your wife or your kids on a plane is one of them. Same thing with this case with the F-35. They just turned it over to them and said, okay, you guys inspect it, tell us when it's good to go and we'll put it up in the air. What?
Well, then students everywhere should demand the same ability to self-grade, and we'd have everybody with a 4.0.
Exactly. Yeah, I got a degree from Harvard. Where is it? Oh, I said I did it, so that must be good enough. Are you challenged recently, and I know you look at this, and do you agree with the Matt Gaetz of the world and the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and the Massey from Ohio and, some of the libertarian thinkers in our government, Ron Paul and his son, who have always said, we've got to stop spending so much money because people simply get rich and pay Congress to do it. Aren't they right?
Well, we're certainly seeing that in the aftermath of the COVID vaccine debacle, where Pfizer and Moderna are now admitting they were prescribing a different vax to their employees. The members of Congress weren't taking the same vax they were dispensing. We're now finding that the 6-foot rule was completely bogus.
But you know, Steve, as I'm thinking about this and I'm listening to you and I'm having this conversation, you know, sure, I tend to lean conservative as well. And I tend to be somebody who believes that we should not let the government run amok. But there is a place where we can't just let a private company run amok with whatever the hell it wants to do. I know some people say, well, once the government gets involved, it's bad. Once the government gets involved, it's communism. Not always. There's times when you want. I don't want my police officer to be a private dude working for some guy who's my neighbor who's dating my wife, you know, who's doing something with my wife or somebody else's wife. I want the government to be involved in law enforcement, matters of security, et cetera. Am I wrong?
But we need to have officials who are going to hold the line and hold them accountable. And we're seeing that with the lawfare taking place in our courts with the Department of Justice. Again, when we look at these purchasing decisions by the Department of Defense, when we look at the promotion of the vax and the lies that were told in that. And you know, like you mentioned at the outset, we have to avoid some of these foreign entanglements, as George Washington warned us about. We don't have to get involved in every country around the world. And George Washington, our founders were so wise, said, don't get involved with these foreign countries. And we've got kind of an attitude in America of isolationism. We've got to balance that because the world's a big place. We want to sell stuff. We want to have peace.
Yeah.
But we got to be very careful.
But I'm gonna push you a little bit. You changed the subject on me. I just asked you a very specific question. There's times when we need government oversight and we need government regulation. Would you not agree?
I absolutely do. And it's on the big things. And the main thing is to preserve our borders, to secure our country. That's one of the few things the Constitution gives to the federal government. And we're abdicating our responsibility, certainly on both counts right now.
Let me ask you, because before we run out of time, you were one of the few Americans who recently were able to go to Russia, and you witnessed the election that was going on there. And, of course, we were told that it was all a phony baloney election, et cetera, et cetera, even though the numbers don't bear that out. There's also a big conversation going on right now about what's going on in Ukraine. And I don't know if you've been reading the headlines, but things are not looking good for the Ukrainian government, for Zelensky, or for the country in general. So what is your take on that situation as it stands right now?
Very briefly, Zelensky will no longer be a legitimate president in about a week. His term of office ends. He has canceled elections. He's canceled independent media. He's canceled opposition political parties. This is the democracy we're supposedly defending. What I saw when I was observing the elections in Moscow last month, and back in September in some of the Donbass area, I did not see CNN, MSNBC, the Washington Post, the New York Times, yet they're all reporting that these are sham elections. What I saw were fair and transparent elections. What I didn't see is any of the media there reporting, but by God, they'll go right into Gaza and embed and report what Hamas says, but they won't go tell the truth of what's happening in Russia or in this war zone in Ukraine.
You know, what's interesting, you mentioned something now about them canceling elections in Ukraine, and I was just thinking of my own country's history, and I happen to know, and you can agree with me or correct me if I happen to be wrong, that in this country, we don't cancel elections. We didn't cancel. Abraham Lincoln had an election in the middle of the Civil War while he was still the president of the United States. We didn't cancel elections during World War II or World War I, and yet we're now giving $150 billion to a country that says, we're not going to have an election while we say we're giving them money because they are a democracy. Somehow that doesn't seem right. It doesn't add up, dude.
We don't cancel elections, but we do have a system right now that's trying to cancel the top opponent to the administration in power. That's almost worse.
Yeah, yeah, I get your point. I disagree with you, but I get your point. thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate your time.
Thanks,
I'm so
my friend.
Glad you came on. It's always great to have you on. That's our show. Now, remember, look outside your own box. Literally, look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes. That's what we do here. We try to look at all the boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll see you next time.